For many years, community councils representing Cincinnati's neighborhoods have been viewed as a vital link to city government. Is that still the case, or are they seen as a roadblock to development? That's the question posed by an upcoming panel discussion by the Woman City Club of Greater Cincinnati. This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Joining me now to discuss who community councils represent and whether their roles need to be clarified are former Cincinnati Mayor and Councilmember David Mann. Thanks for being here, David.
Good to be here, Lucy. Thank you.
Bond Hill Community Council President Jacqueline Edmerson. Thanks for being here, Jackie.
Thank you for inviting me.
And East Price Hill Community Council President Amber Kassam. Welcome back, Amber.
Thanks for having us.
David, you have a long history in city government, both as mayor, as a member of city council. To put it just bluntly, what's the role of community councils?
It has evolved quite a bit. I was telling Amber that the first campaign that I was involved in, not as a candidate, was in ancient times when the Democratic Charter Coalition was coming together and it obtained a majority that year for the first time in a long time. And the theme of the campaign of the coalition was 44 neighborhoods, one great city. Now we have 52 neighborhoods because some neighborhoods have split up. But that was a honest appeal to the need to better develop partnerships with community councils. And that has changed quite a bit over the years. And I happen to have been at City Hall during a lot of that and supported a lot of the changes. And I think I don't quite understand the concerns just now. I understand the issue at Hyde Park. I understand that there's some questions there about maybe the implementation of the good words and the policies of the city. But I think if you look at 1971 compared with now, there is a lot that's happened to support community councils, provide funding for neighborhood projects, formalize the obligations of city employees to engage civically. And I think, at least in my time, as I was leaving 4 years ago, I think community councils could count on an assurance that they will have been heard. That doesn't mean that in the end, the decision is going to go the way that a particular community wants. That's a separate issue. Ultimately, council does not delegate its, and it can't delegate under our former government, its authority. But I believe that, at least in my experience, compared with 1971, we have come a long, long way.
Do you think the influence of community councils has changed over that time?
Oh, absolutely. We provide funding to community councils. This is a way for them to respond to community priorities as they see them. And with a few exceptions, the city doesn't question the decisions about that money. We have continuing support between the city and city departments and community councils compared to the way it was. I think we've come a long way. But I have to emphasize, and I was thinking, as the event tomorrow night has been on my mind, you know, I live in Clifton, and I can count on both hands and maybe more the controversies that have come to city council involving Clifton. And we did decide we're going to keep the Esquire Theater, not a Wendy's, but we decided, and that was important to the community, but we decided that we're going to allow a senior housing complex to be built at near the Ludlow Viaduct, which, despite opposition, which has become a tremendous success. So there's not a community that doesn't have issues and doesn't have the need to feel some. I mean, at the end of the day, I think what we would hope for is a sense of access, a sense of communication, and the belief that a community has been heard. Can we provide assurance that the council will always agree with every community council in town? Not going to happen. I don't think it should, actually.
Jackie, I want to get your thoughts on community councils. I mean, the role and influence of community councils has been kind of in the spotlight this year with that Hyde Park Square redevelopment that David just referred to. There was a lot of opposition to that in the community. Council approved it anyway. Now it's back to the drawing board. Did you watch that play out? What did you make of it from where you are in Bond Hill?
I watched it play out, and I also signed a petition for Hyde Park. And I know that as I was watching it play out, we had our own situation going on in Bond Hill where there was a proposal to build affordable housing. LDG had proposed building affordable housing in a Villages of Daybreak. And the promise of the Villages of Daybreak was for single family, more middle, higher middle class housing for
market rate housing.
Market, I think above market, mm-hmm. I think. That was the goal, the promise for the Villages of Daybreak. And so when it was proposed to build affordable housing in that same area, people were saying, no, no affordable housing because we have a huge affordable housing project right across the street. And we see how the investors have not kept up with the keeping it clean, keep doing upkeep for the people. So they were saying, no, 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 back up. That wasn't the promise, because there was a promise, I guess, 20 years ago that we were going to bring people who were more upper middle class, who had moved out of the city, back to the city, to Bond Hill with this new housing. And so when they proposed the development, then I think people in the Villages of Daybreak felt like that was that the city and others had made a promise to them that they weren't keeping, because they were bringing, just like with Hyde Park, this affordable housing unit, and it was going to be taller than all of the houses, and it was going to be for 150 people. Mm. And as you can imagine, if you're in a housing development, there's already limited spaces for parking, so you're going to bring 150 more people. And we know that in today's world, one or more person lives in an apartment.
Sure.
So we're talking about issues with parking and all kinds of issues. And so there was a petition that was signed, and not like it happened in Hyde Park, like to put it on the ballot. Mm-hmm. But when Bond Hill heard that they were rescinding the decision in Hyde Park, then they were like, oh, okay, you're going to rescind that. Why don't you rescind what's going on in Bond Hill?
Yeah.
Is it because of the socioeconomics of the community at large? And we've interacted with the ladies that have worked diligently. I'm just saying ladies because I only know the ladies. I'm sure there are men somewhere in the background. But we worked very diligently with the ladies, and they told us about some of the things that they had done. And they were talking about it costs almost $500,000 with the attorneys. And,
for the Hyde Park gathering.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
For all that. Who can afford that?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So it does look like it's unfair and unequal. Mm. So when the difference between Hyde Park and Bond Hill.
Yeah. I'm going to get Amber in the conversation.
Yes.
First, I want to say we're talking about community councils in Cincinnati, who they represent, the role they play in city government. You can join the conversation. Call 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Amber, I know you were following what was happening in Hyde Park because we've talked to you about it on the show before. Talk about the perspective of East Price Hill. I mean, why were you all watching it? Do you all feel heard by city council?
Absolutely not. And the difference between East Price Hill and a neighborhood like Hyde Park is that we're communicating for basic rights and basic services to be met. And that's something that the city has a duty, or Mr. Mann, correct me, writ of mandamus. Is that the correct term?
That's a good term. Yes, ma'am.
Yeah. the duty to make sure. And so I heard current council members, particularly one that's from Price Hill, say that communities and resident voice is an impediment to development, and also said that if this was happening in Price Hill, it wouldn't even be a conversation. And that's a quote. If anybody wants it, I can send it to you. But, you know, we don't want to be listened to. We want to be worked with. We don't want to be talked at. We want to be able to move some of the decisions. And even when you're, well, you could put a community benefits agreement, right? Well, the burden is left on us without attorneys. And Mr. Mann mentioned funding that the city gives us. You know, when you have 18,000 residents or 20,000 like West Price Hill has, that's 37 cents a resident per year. And we have all of the, you know, I have three gateways that we have to maintain. And that is, you know, I don't know who came up with that agreement, but the city tricked community councils into maintaining public property with the $7,000 to $10,000 that we can't rely on because it's only a leftover amount that's considered. But again, we're talking about $7,000 to $10,000 a year about funding that's given to the community. So yeah, there's no consent in the decisions that are being made. And I think the job of politicians or good politicians or not corrupt politicians would be to help move both parties to a better agreement. But instead, I've heard current council members say, oh, don't worry, they'll get over it. Hmm. The community will get over it. So it just seems like we don't want to be worked with. We've been called an impediment. We've been treated like an impediment. We've been excluded. They've created a tier of what's called professional stakeholders' opinions. And that's because apparently people that live adjoining and adjacent to these developments that they want to externalize the burden to the communities or on the communities, is just something that doesn't matter anymore.
Well, I want to get back to Hyde Park. And one thing that I mentioned the housing that was planned for Hyde Park, I don't think it was intended to be affordable housing. It was going to be more expensive, but it was a higher height limit and the right. boutique hotel. There were all these things that Hyde Park residents didn't want. So David, let's come back to you. The big question this Woman's City Club Forum is asking is, are these community councils a crucial link between the city and its neighborhoods? You seem to say that's been the plan. That was the idea for many years. Or have they become some kind of obstacle to development? I know Amber referenced that some council members have raised that concern. What do you think?
Well, I hope that that's not the prevailing view, because partnerships, trust, a willingness to listen, a willingness to debate, negotiate is critical. And if we've lost that, that's terrible. I think about TQL Stadium for FCC. Now, it happened to be on the boundary between the West End and OTR. And there was opposition in both communities, and it was strongest in the West End. And I said to Jeff Birding, who was leading the advocacy of FCC, you've got to work with the West End Community Council. It's up to you to address as best you can these issues. And I said to him, they need legal help, and you should pay for it. And they did. And Jeff said to me after the fact that he thought where I was pushing was wrong. After the fact, he said, it worked. It worked. And the West End benefited from that process. And so that's an example of how it can work. When I was talking about, the money, Amber, you brought that up.
Funding.
This is an annual allotment that helps. Nobody's saying that it gives you the tools that Hyde Park has, and that's an issue because we want community councils, community organizations to develop their ability to advocate. And I always said, I mean, my attitude about possible developments. I cannot tell you how many developers I said, have you talked to the community? If you don't, you're crazy, because opposition from communities can sink you. And we just had an example that that can happen, even when you're talking about a very affluent set of developers. So there has to be a process. There has to be trust. And I've spent some time preparing for the forum, talking with the director of planning, reviewing some legislation that's been adopted since I was there, the connected communities framework, the civic engagement plan that has been adopted just last year, I think. And there's a tremendous gap between what's on paper and how community organizations perceive it. So that's a problem that needs to be addressed.
This is what I know, not what I think. This is what I know. I know that there have been some opportunities for engagement with the city and with some of their directors. But when I look at those meetings, they're usually at 12, 1, and 2. Most of us are at work. Like, I am oftentimes invited to participate in things, but I have a job to do. This is a volunteer. I don't get paid. So they're trying to engage us during the hours that they are paid to engage us, where I'm at work. Mm-hmm. And most of the people who volunteer for Bond Hill are at work. So we miss out on that opportunity to engage. And I remember when the city had some additional monies during COVID, and I had asked if they would be willing to hire someone in each neighborhood, especially in Bond Hill, to have a paid position, maybe $50,000, for someone whose responsibility would be to interact with City Hall and government, and then bring that information back to Bond Hill. And then Bond Hill community members would be able to have a discussion about what they wanted and how they felt about all the initiatives that were going on in the city.
But of course, they couldn't afford.
No. They said they couldn't. Yeah. But it's one thing when it's your job to get paid and to say that you're interacting with the community and trying to engage the community. It's another thing when you are the community and you have a job and you're trying to put all these extra hours in,
sure,
trying to look out for your community and look out for your family and look out for your job. It's so imbalanced.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And I apologize for cutting you off. We do need to take a quick break. We're going to continue our conversation after that. Later in the program, we talk with an Ohio man who spent 39 years behind bars for a crime he didn't commit. This is Cincinnati Edition. You're listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're continuing our conversation about Cincinnati's community councils and the influence they have on city government. My guests are former Cincinnati Mayor and Councilmember David Mann, Bond Hill Community Council President Jacqueline Edmerson, and East Price Hill Community Council President Amber Kassam. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. We do have a caller on the line. Hi, Brian. Thanks so much for calling. What's your question or comment?
Yes. Thanks for taking my comment. You can hear me fine. Is that correct?
We sure can. Thank you.
Okay. Great. Yes. I'm on the Mount Lookout Community Council, and I would like to at least highlight a couple of positive things related to development, because the question, as I understand, is are community councils impediments? I guess if you went and looked at the data, like for Mount Lookout, which we have done, Mount Lookout, in terms of residential variances, hasn't even opposed 5% of those variance applications. So those are developments that are going on that the community is not opposing at all, at a very low rate. Also, the community has for years tried to engage the city on a large development opportunity, probably the last large land opportunity there is in our area, to try to work on some of the city goals like affordable housing, maybe help fix some of the parking problems and traffic problems we have. And so I'd like to at least highlight that, you know, there are communities that are trying to actually encourage some development in certain areas, and they probably know best of where it might fit, or at least have some good input for that. It's very, very hard to get the city to work on those types of opportunities. So I think it's easy to highlight if there's a development that comes up that's driven by a developer that the community might not be happy with, and saying, well, we're just against that. That's not always the case. And so I just want to bring that to the point that for years we've actively tried to pursue them with developers to get something to happen. Thank you.
Thank you, Brian. That's a great point. We appreciate your calling. Amber, you were nodding your head in agreement as Brian was talking. I mean, it sounds like you're saying, hey, there is some development we want, just not everything that comes along.
Yeah, that's a true statement. Even in Oakley, right? Joe Grow, I've talked with, and he said the same thing. We don't oppose many developments. I write letters of support more than opposition. I write letters begging for city engagement. And that was something that Brian talked about was, you know, we are always in this space talking about community engagement, but what power and control and autonomy do residents, the taxpayers, have to encourage city engagement? And that's what Brian was talking about, that two-way communication, and that our needs are being met, not just them coming to us when they want us to mulch a gateway or write a variance, right? There's no other city engagement. And I'd like to frame it as city engagement rather than community engagement.
Okay. We also, I'm sorry, go ahead, Jackie.
Yeah, I think you're making a great point because city councils meet after hours. You know, most of us have jobs, and so we have to meet after hours.
Community councils meet after hours.
Community councils, yep, meet after hours. So oftentimes I invite people who work for the city to some of the meetings that we're having after hours. They don't come. Mm-hmm. Because they have families too. And I don't say, oh, you should need to come. No, you need to be with your children. You need to be at the baseball games or whatever. I appreciate that because I know how important family is. But that causes a lot of, like, a disconnect that hinders engagement.
Yeah.
Because if I can only meet in the day and you can only meet in the evening, then when do we have to really engage and have conversation,
sure,
about what we need?
We have another caller on the line. Hi, John. Thanks for calling. What's your question or comment?
My comment is, as a developer who's worked in several cities, Cincinnati has about the worst process I've seen. And the process is basically that there's no uniformity in what makes a community council and what their role is. If I go to Linwood Community Council, you might get 4 people there. If I get over the Rhine, I might get 200 people there. And the rules to be a member of a community council are different in every community council. I was involved in a project, and over the Rhine, we spent $780,000, and we never built the project. And we were approved by the city, but the community opposition was led by people who were not part of the community, and the rules in Over the Rhine are real simple. If you slept there last night, you can be a member, but if you don't live there but you have a business there, you can't be a member. And that is common with all our community councils. So when you're talking about it, understand, is a community council the same in every neighborhood? And the answer is no, it's not.
I'm going to stop you there, John. David, is that true? Is there a lack of uniformity, do you think?
Well, sure, because the neighborhoods vary tremendously. You've got large neighborhoods, you've got small neighborhoods, you've got affluent neighborhoods, you have neighborhoods that are filled with people who are just trying to hold on to their lives and their families. And one neighborhood is fully functional and has the capacity to interrelate positively with developers, with the city. Another neighborhood needs help in just developing basic structures and inspiring neighbors to participate with community councils and the like. The city has not been willing, and I don't think they should, to tell the community council what your rules are for participation, who can be members.
So that's
each community council is different, and each neighborhood is different. So that in and of itself, I think, is not surprising. And I think at the end, in terms of fundamental principles, the city has to deal with genuineness and integrity with every neighborhood. And if that is not happening, then we're missing an opportunity, I think, to have a constructive, positive relationship, and which will contribute to improved neighborhoods.
Lucy, I am so sorry to interrupt. I know you've got like 20 seconds. But, you know, what the developer was describing is exactly what community councils see as harm. And I think, David, again, correct me, is the term arbitrary and capricious? Right. You know, if you want to treat every community the same.
Right.
That is the exact mentality.
What law school are you in?
The streets.
Yeah.
The streets. I hung out in Hyde Park over the summer.
That's right. Well, there's a lot more we could talk about. If you're interested in this, the Women's City Club Forum is Tuesday. That's tomorrow from 5:30 p.m. to 7:30 p.m. There's going to be an in-depth discussion. You can find more information on our website, WVXU.org. I've been talking with former Cincinnati Mayor and Councilmember David Mann, Bond Hill Community Council President Jacqueline Edmerson, and East Price Hill Community Council President Amber Kassam. Thank you all so much for your time today.
Did you say where the gathering is tomorrow?
They can get that on our website, okay, WVXU.org. Okay. Yes, sir. Okay. Up next, after 39 years behind bars for a crime he didn't commit, an Ohio man tells his story. This is Cincinnati Edition.